Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Episode 5, Season 12. Yes, we are back, and we've just been talking about Germans, Furniture Assembly, Porsche and Mark Higgins. Take from that what you will, form your own sentences. Anyway, on my right, I say hello, Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And on my left, you'd normally expect me to say hello, Ryan Champion, but no, Ryan Champion, sadly, is travel. Well, not sadly, but he's made up. He's very happy. He's travelling to Barbados today, only for 3 weeks. Bless him. So on my left, I say hello, Trevor Agnew. Hello, Trevor Agnew.
Hello, Tony Simpson and Jack Bennion. And Ryan Champion never mentioned he was going to Barbados. That's surprising.
Yeah, it's very unlike him. It's very unlike him. Listen, boys, before we start, we've got some Gary Boyd facts. We've got some Gary Boyd facts, good, which is a great way to start any podcast, isn't it? This is stuff that he hasn't yet tweeted out. And I'm sure you follow Gary, but over the weekend, obviously, he's got finger on the pulse of events and he just churns out so much stuff. And yet he still sends us stuff that he doesn't tweet, which I think is amazing. But anyway, right. Rally trivia. Fastest stage wins by rally. The opening five rounds of the WRC in 2018 have a different driver record, the fastest stage win on each rally. Monte Carlo was Thierry Neuville. Sweden was Hayden Padden. Mexico was Sebastian Ogier. Corsica was Sebastian Loeb. And in Argentina was Oit Tanak. It has taken until round six in Portugal for a driver to record the fastest stage win on a second rally. And this was achieved very impressively by... It's gone very quiet. Boys let me down. I'll fill in the blank. Hayden Padden.
Oh,
there you go. Bit of a staff for you there. You could also note that three manufacturers have one faster stage of the rally win each, while Hyundai set faster stage win on three of the six events. There you go. A little bit of a staff for you there. A little bit of a staff for you there. Just to get the juices flowing, of course, for Rally Portugal, which was at the weekend. And I dipped into All Live. I dipped into the Twitter feed. I did it as much as I can. Although with WRC Live, I love it, but equally it frustrates me because I never feel like I'm completely on top of everything. I don't know whether you boys have that feeling. Jack, you ever get that feeling where you think I could miss something here?
I constantly have that feeling. Yeah. As a journalist, you always want to know absolutely everything that's happening. So yeah, that can happen.
Trev, we all had a bit of a chat. I think on Saturday we had some messages going back and forth. We've seen you basically going the beach. You'd watched it up to a point and then went the beach, which was a very, very good way of chilling out on a Saturday afternoon. I'm sure you got up to speed with the event when you got home and everything else. A day of carnage, I think, has been openly suggested for day one. I don't remember too many days like that, do you?
No, there was a bit, I suppose, 2 years ago. There's a lot happened on that rally as well. Remember the fires in Punta de Lima? That's 3 years in a row where Hayden Padden's come a cropper on that stage. Him and Tanak, if you remember, that was quite a busy old day as well.
Jack, it's one of those things now, and I'm going to ask you, and then I'm going to ask Trev exactly the same thing here, because this is just something I was thinking about. I watched the highlights as well last night, as well as obviously watching the roundups over the few days and stuff. There was some mechanical issues, and obviously you think about probably Tanak. Do we put that down as a mechanical issue? Is that a fair one, or is that a 50-50, do you think, Jack?
For Tanak?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was technical, wasn't it?
Okay. Yari Matti?
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
What did you think? You being a driver?
That's a very, very loose term to use, Trev. I would say.
I think it's harsh to blame Yari for that one.
I'd say it's. Apparently, he did have something in his notes for it, from what I remember. I don't know whether it's one of those situations where you see something, Trev, and you think, I'll get away with that, or I'll get over that, or, you know, we've all done it, that cuts there, whatever it may be. I don't know whether it was one of those moments.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. I did take the opportunity on WRC Plus to watch about three or four different drivers over the same piece of road. an interesting note that some have done cut in their notes and didn't take as big a cut as Yari Matty did. And again, it's just how far into it go. And on the spur of the moment, you'll just have a go at it. Sometimes you just think, okay, it looks okay from here, but clearly it wasn't. So, as he said, is it his driving, or is it because the car's still a little bit soft at times? That's what they have to have a conversation about and decide as to how, what his approach is going to be going forward, because it's something that's happened quite regularly, if I can remember, back to last year and this year. Yeah.
Jack, where I was going with this, thanks, Trev, where I was going with this is that we seem to be mechanical issues seem to be now getting more outweighed by driver error. And I think the balance has shifted. And I don't know if the balance has shifted because of obviously the increased pace of the cars and the, you know, the development that's going forward with the, you know, we still call them a 17 car, of course we do. But obviously we know they're quicker. We know they got more downforce and everything else. And obviously we've got now quicker drivers at the front, and the quicker drivers at the front that I include in this are Sebastien Ogier, Thierry, Oit, you know, ironically, Oit did have an issue on this one. Are the others now perhaps in positions where they're overdriving to their capabilities or the capabilities of the car?
I think you've hit on a good point with how much the cars have stepped forward. You know, you mentioned before that you know there's been times in your career where you've seen a rock or something and you've thought, yeah, go on, we'll have a go at that, and kind of ignored your note, or you've ignored caution and gone for it. And I think maybe there's times where these drivers would have got away with it in a 2016 spec car. They're pushing so much quicker in these 2017 cars that it is having a bit of an effect. But to be honest, from what I've seen, you know, Portugal's always been a difficult rally. I think we've seen other rallies this year where we've had problems, but I think we're seeing an even fair share of problems being dished out. And you know, you can overanalyze a driver hitting a rock for days. You know, we could literally sit here for days and talk about whether that was Yari Matty's fault or whether it was luck or whether whatever it was, whether he didn't have something in his notes. And really, it's very difficult to ascertain whether the driver is at fault for small things like that. But at the end of the day, small things like that have ended his rally, and they add up over the course of a season, don't they?
Trev, we're in this kind of similar vein, and there's so many drivers I guess we're going to discuss throughout this podcast with regards to Yari Matty. And you know, as you said, you know, afterwards they interviewed him, and he openly kind of said, you know, is it my drive, and is it car, is it this, is it that? And do you know what? There was several things that struck me there. One, yeah, the honesty is always, which I think is something special about WRC. I think, you know, our drivers are very, very honest. And I don't know whether it's just due to the fact that obviously WRC Plus and all these other things. But the other thing that kind of struck me a little bit, Trev, was the not knowing.
Yeah, the not knowing to a point, though. I think with Yari Matty Latvala, if you look back to his Volkswagen Polo days as well, there were things breaking on his car that weren't breaking on the others. So if I were him, I would look back and say, okay, that what happened in that situation? What happened in that situation? And try and ascertain the facts, but be honest about it. Because clearly, if it is something that he's doing as a driver on a car, maybe just leaving the steering open too much at one point. I don't know the exact circumstances, but I remember from the Volkswagen days where his car was braking more than the others. I'm sure Jack, you'll remember that as well.
Yeah, I remember Yari having a fair share of problems. Yeah, I think it's difficult, isn't it? But it seems like Sebastien Ogier has far less of these problems than any other driver. And there's only so much you can put that down to luck. There's only so many times that can happen before you can say, well, actually, there's something he's doing with his notes, or there's a way he approaches a corner that makes his driving more sensible, that doesn't pick up these kind of problems. Because you can't put the number of incidents that have happened without OJ having one down to luck.
It's been my point for a few times now. I keep going back to the same thing with Sebastian Loeb, and I go back to the same things with Tommy Mäkinen. all perceived as being lucky drivers. And sure enough, there are plenty of times where the kind of issues or make mistakes. And Ogier has made more over the last couple of years, I would say, than he did in the 3 or 4 years he was with Volkswagen. I just don't think it should all be pinned on luck. It just is. It's a lazy way to look at it.
No, I agree. I couldn't agree more. But there's definitely something, because there seems to be this divide now, which is already starting to happen in the championship. And what I mean is by that, you know, I think whether it was last week's podcast or the week or the week before, where we started to, or I posed the question, I think it was to Rye. I think it was me and Ryan at the top of the program, when I said, you know, is it too soon to start speculating on drivers and stuff for next year? And he said, no, it's way too soon. This seems really obvious, and I'm opening this up to all the drivers. Are we finding people like Yari and people like Chris, who I'm sure we're going to discuss more, are we a kind of last chance saloons, Trev?
Well, it's not my call on things like that. I certainly, I think over the years there have been plenty of opportunities where others haven't. Have they capitalized on those opportunities? We'll see in the next few months as to what's going to happen going into next year. But it goes back to the same thing, and it's what, you know, I talked about when it happened on the weekend, is if there's a pattern there, and with Chris Meek, who you mentioned, if there's a pattern of him running wide in corners, falling off the side of the road, or knocking tires off or knocking wheels off, I can certainly think of plenty of incidents that have happened where he's arrived too fast into corners, and that's been the consequence. The one at the weekend was a horrific consequence. But I just would like to hope that he would be analysing it and just making sure that his rec is right, that his pace is right, that the notes are right, and just go back and look and see what the pattern is. On the back of that, try and learn something, because I just... I don't know if you watched the in-car, that incident, and what happened as soon as the car stopped, where they effectively were trapped, or Chris was trapped in the car. You know, 2 years ago, we saw what happened when a car catches fire, and that would just be horrendous. So I think analyze quite deeply as to why this is happening. A similar trait is happening. I can see a pattern. I hope everybody else can.
Jack, you know, we all want all the drivers to do well. Because it makes it so much more interesting. And, you know, I suppose Chris is a swashbuckling. I'm not going to go for the lazy comparisons. It's been done a million times. But, you know, you looked at, you know, him going down to running on three wheels, for instance, and doing the, you know, the street stage and stuff like that, which, we created great images, and you just wonder whether, to some degree, at times, is there a trade-off with regards to, you know, Chris's swashbuckling, flamboyant, whatever description, whatever title you want to give it for Citroën, that they get something out of that and not just the result, if I'm making some sense.
Yeah, I mean, Chris... an interesting person, and then, to be honest, I think as it stands, he suits Citroën's tactics perfectly, because we all know on his day, Chris Meek can be as fast as anybody else in the World Rally Championship. Now, if you look at the other teams, they've got an extra car. So, if you look at how Citroën have approached this year, you've got to assume that they didn't think they were going to win the Manufacturers' Championship, because they've effectively been a car down. So, if you look at it like that, they didn't come in to win the Manufacturers' Championship. They've come in to win rallies. And if you want someone to win rallies and you can't get Sebastian Ogier, then you want Chris Meek, as far as I'm concerned. If I was going to put the fastest driver I could get, apart from Sebastian Ogier, in a car, it would be Chris Meek in the World Rally Championship. The problem comes now is if Citroën do add another car next year and they want to start going for Manufacturer Championships, then is Chris's approach going to work for them? You know, as far as I'm concerned, Chris has proven himself to be one of the fastest drivers in the championship, but also proven himself to be error prone, and that doesn't work for a manufacturer that is going for a Manufacturer's Championship. So as long as Citroën's targets are as they are now, I think Chris Meek's safe, and I think he's the best person you could have in that seat. If they change focus and they add another car, then I think Chris has got to be looking over his shoulder at, you know, who Citroën could bring in to do a better job of working towards a Manufacturers' Championship.
Trev, just taking on what Jack just said there, do you think there is an element of perhaps, you know, preparing to lose a few to win a few almost?
I take Jack's point, but I would also, you know, I'm a huge Chris Meek fan, always have been, always will be. He's uber intelligent. That's the whole point, you know. For someone who's smart and so clever, I haven't seen any evidence where he's going to learn from this already, with the quotes that I've seen, where he's saying, okay, the best car I've had is the best C3 I've had in gravel. We know we've got the pace there. And then there was something around the language of the average gods, or the god of averages, hasn't been good to me. Surely that's got to change in the next while. Where Jack's talking about winning the manufacturers, you have to be consistent to win rallies as well. It's no good leading at the end of legs and then bidding it. You have to be consistent to win rallies. And, you know, a lot of the time when he's won the rallies, he's led from the front and he hasn't put a wheel wrong. It's rare that he get away with something and win a rally, you know, but it's just that level of consistency to win rallies, which is a goal, clearly, of Citroën's. That's still not there.
Can I just put something to, I'm going to come to you first, Jack. And if Chris Meek was 10 years younger and still doing the same things, would he be benched?
It's a good question. And, you know, I think as much as you've got to analyse Chris Meek in this situation, you've got to think about what would Citroën do if they did bench him as well. Because, you know, is Stefan Lefebvre a person you want to put in the car to replace Chris Meek? I don't think at this point in his career he's ready to perform at Chris Meek's standard.
No, I take that. What where I'm going with this, Jack, right, is the fact that, you know, if this was a younger driver, would the team be harsher on him than what they're being? You know, we see there's a lot of young drivers, and I'm sure Trev could probably name some, and you could probably name some as well, to be honest with you, over the last few years that, you know, I've came in and it hasn't quite happened. You know, use Citroën as an example. You go back to the days of someone like Duval, maybe, and not a great example, but, you know, I'd won Rally Australia and then it kind of unraveled from there on in, and then kind of he disappeared again. One of those. There's been lots of drivers that have been cut, basically. And I just, you know, I just wonder whether while Chris's age is a benefit to him at the moment, but there's also this other thing as well, which you can't teach an old dog new tricks, and that's what my fear is.
Well, look at Oit Tanak. You know, when he came in, he made mistakes, and, you know, he wasn't the complete driver. He's worked on it for years. He's learned from his mistakes. He's clearly analysed what he's good at and what he's not good at. He's worked on it, and now he's, you know, whatever you think of Jari Mäkelä, he is a very, very fast rally driver, and Oit Tanak is consistently beating him on a regular basis in a new car. And obviously we've seen a different Oit this year, but we've seen a driver who's learned from his mistakes, built on his performances, and got much better. I'd argue that if we're talking 10 years ago, as you said earlier, for Chris Meek, then a manufacturer would be more lenient with him because they're going to give him more time to develop. They realise he's not got the experience to perform at a certain level consistently. And, you know, you'd like to think they give him a little bit more time, a little bit like what Toyota maybe are doing with Ezepeka Lappi. Although, to be honest, I think Lappi's been brilliant since he's come in and hasn't needed that kind of, is he good enough? Is he not good enough? You know, I think Lappi's clearly good enough. But that kind of thing where a manufacturer accepts that a driver's going to have a few accidents, is going to get things a little bit wrong before they get better. And we've seen Oit, you know, Malcolm brought him in, sent him away after he, you know, had some pretty stupid crashes, brought him back in, and, you know, he delivered the goods. And I think in this case, Meek's age is probably playing against him, because Citroën must be looking at that thinking, well, you know, he's had this long to fix these problems that he's got, and he's not done it. So, you know, is he really gonna turn it around?
Trev, just going on from what Jack said, the point, you know, same kind of like a point that I've just made to you, you know, is the age a blessing or a curse in this instance? Because I just can't help but feel as if if he was a younger driver, then things would be a little bit tougher. I don't know whether I'm being fair saying that. Please put me straight.
I think we should, let's turn it around. So Chris Meek is lightning fast, can win rallies, proven that, won rallies. There's one small thing that crops up quite regularly where he makes a misjudgment, a driver error, which is a judgment, a decision that he makes at the time. If he can identify what it is, and he's putting the effort and the work into identifying what that is and sorts that out, then he's the full package. That's all that's missing, that one little tweak. that one little tweak has disastrous consequences far too often. So if he nails that, then you'd have him nailed on for any manufacturer. Why would you not have him? He can win rallies, and that, with that consistency then, and the intelligence to finish on the podium when he can't push for it, which he seems to have learned, I think, over the last year, then you definitely have him in your team. He's light and quick.
No, I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit here, Trev. I'm just concerned that the fact that, you know, it's a reoccurring conversation.
So here's your argument. If you put Pontus Tiedemann in that car then, and you set him out and you said, right, do five rallies. So if he crashed in the third rally, then you're asking the question, would he get many more opportunities if he's doing that on a regular basis? And you're probably right. You wouldn't get the opportunities that Chris certainly has.
Yeah, that is kind of the point I'm making. And, you know, I guess we're back in the realms of, you know, direct comparisons. You know, Chris, and we've used this before, of course, you know, Danny Sordo and Chris Meek were fighting in Junior World Rally Championship together. Here we are now, fast forward on a number of years. I know that's an unfair because Danny's done a lot more World Championship events since they went their separate ways. And of course, Chris went and did other things and had times out of the sport and things like that. But, you know, is it a mentality thing? I don't know. I don't understand. I want to understand, and I really want to see him do well. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm questioning a little bit.
Yeah, I don't have the answer to it. I just go back to the same thing. He needs to work on the one thing that seems to be letting him down quite regularly, and go about it in a rational way. And once he gets that sorted, he'll win a lot more rallies and be contending for championships. And you could say that for a lot of them. Don't lose sight of the fact, though, it's so easy to make mistakes in these cars. You know, the difference in... Look at Portugal. You know, I said beforehand, there's 13 drivers there that could win stages in that rally. I think there are 11 different drivers who won a stage. And to be on that pace and be that competitive, you have to be on it, but you got to take into context as well. These are the best guys in the world. And the ultimate guy in Ogier can do it consistently year after year and make the fewest mistakes. That's what they've got to sort out, the rest of them all together. And we're seeing certainly advancements with Neuville and Tanak, especially in the last 12 months. And maybe there'll be a championship made out of it this year. Certainly looking a bit more exciting.
I'd say so. Jack, just moving on from that and what we've just been talking about, of course, with other drivers. Do you think it's your opinion? I'm interested in this, and I'll come to Trevor in a second. You know, we look at the things that went on, and ironically, I did get a little bit smug for a very short period of time when Hayden was going really well, and I'm really, you know, I was like, yes, this is what, you know, again, another driver we like. He has been on the program, you know, plenty enough, and he's a really good guy and everything else. And, you know, it's a culvert, you know, and it's that's it. He has to go to hospital for checks. He said he was fine, but, you know, right thing to do, go and get checked out. But someone like Hayden, you know, at the other end of the scale here, where, you know, he's been benched for a period of time, then he comes back in and, you know, yeah, I was, you know, I kind of said, well, you know, he could be on the pace because of, you know, road position and because of obviously what he's been doing back home. But, you know, there's nothing like seat time, is there, in these cars? So is it, we don't know what the brief was from Hyundai, but, you know, should he be cut a little bit of slack on that one because, you know, he hasn't been in the car, or how do you see it?
Yeah, I definitely think he should be cut a bit of slack. You know, he did the one thing where he showed the pace. You know, he was clearly very quick. And, you know, I do think he was a bit unlucky with what happened. But yeah, seat time is key. He's not done a gravel rally this year. We've only seen him in Sweden so far. Very, very different kind of rally to Sweden. So yeah, I think it'd be harsh to judge him at this point based on that rally, on that performance. But the problem is Hayden is that he's up against arguably the most consistent rally driver in the championship in Danny Sordo for a seat. And you know, Danny just, well, I've lost count of how many times we've talked about Danny on this podcast and what he does, but, you know, he's not Chris Meek. You know, there is no rally on the calendar where you're going to make Danny Sordi your favourite to win the rally. You know, that might be a harsh thing to say, to come out and say it, but it's what everyone thinks and what everyone knows. The truth of the matter is, if you're a manufacturer going for a championship, then Danny Sordo is one of my first people in my team. If we're playing football dream team, and we're picking four drivers to go and win as a manufacturer's championship, Danny is very, very high on my list because consistently delivers results, has good pace, scores podiums when they're there, takes the points when the podiums aren't there. And to fight against that is Hayden Paddon, who's had a really tough year last year, massively tough year mentally and in the car, and also comes back to do Sweden and then comes back to do Portugal. And bearing in mind, as he's entering Portugal, Danny Sordo is on a very, very strong run of form. You know, it's a really difficult task for Hayden, and it's really difficult to make himself look good against what Danny's done so far this year.
Yeah, but what did he do? He went out in the first proper stage and beat them all.
Absolutely. And that's what... Yeah. That's
what I said earlier. The pace was good, but you can't, you know, Danny's finished the rally and Hayden hasn't. So when we look back on this rally, you know, who's done the better job?
Yeah, indeed. I agree with you wholeheartedly. There's a fine line between getting in the car. Now, remember, at the end of the first stage, he wasn't that happy with the car. But if you're on top of the car and everything's working for you and it's effortless and everything's flowing, then you drive at that pace. It's a bit like Neville when he was talking about how he's going to drive the power stage. He knows when he gets into it, 2 kilometres into it, or even half a kilometre into it, how the car feels. If it continues with the same feeling and he saved his tyres, then he'll have a crack at it. And that's not putting himself at risk anymore. He's not taking many more chances because he feels so much more relaxed in the car. And, you know, it does happen, as we've talked about before, where a small mistake completely throws your rally. Hayden's job on that rally was to be the third driver and bring home some team points. He didn't achieve that, and that's... That's the bottom line at the end of the day, isn't it?
Tony, can I just
add something very quickly there? We had a whole probably 10-15 minute conversation about Chris Meek, right? And one of the key things you raised was if it was 10 years earlier in Chris Meek's career, how would we treat him? Now, it's not 10 years earlier, but we've just had basically the same discussion about a very similar driver in Hayden Paddon, who we know is very, very quick, has made a couple of mistakes over the past few years, and I think we've all agreed the three of us have just cut him a load of slack.
Good point.
Yeah.
So point proven.
There you go, Jack. You're done now. You can finish. That's it. You can clock off early.
Well, it was all of us. We all contributed to both conversations, and they. And
No. I'll come to you first, Trev. I'm going to ask you the same point as well in a second. Trev, do you see this floating third car, and you know, obviously in Citroën's case, has been second and third car, I think at times it feels like, but do you see the floating third car, do you see this as a thing of the past next year?
Well, the floating third car was a necessity really to keep those two drivers on board at Hyundai, so sharing the workload. The floating third car at Citroën is a bad drive, isn't it?
It's the same with M Sport as well. M Sport is still a slightly different animal, of course, to the other three teams. But I just wonder, you know, looking at Toyota, you know, we don't know what's going to happen moving forward. I don't know, obviously, I don't know when Jari Matti's deal's up, for instance, and let's not even start that speculating. But, you know, they've been very solid with their three drivers. Yeah. Obviously, all the other teams have had drivers coming in and out. And I... You know, apart from the hoo-ha that we got, of course, with Loeb coming back, which, you know, was bittersweet in some instances, I'm not convinced it's worked for any party.
No, it's something that's there because it's a financial situation. If you've got the money to run three proper cars with top drivers in it, you can do it. That's the only way you're going to win the manufacturer's championship.
But do you think that moving forward that the teams will sit down at the end of the year and go, look, the only way we're going to be able to do this now, realistically, is to do it this way. And we have the three drivers. You know, let's look at M Sport last year. Of course, had their three drivers, didn't they? You know, Elvin did every round. Oyton and Sebastian Ogier did every round. You know, that the success was there to see. Now, obviously, we realise the commercial things that M Sport have got going on. Obviously, you know, to some degree, the commercial things that Citroën have going on as well. Of course, Toyota remain firm, and you know, Hyundai have got obviously, you know, four contracted drivers that they're trying to work this rotation with. And the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, in order to win the manufacturers, are they going to have to commit now to having a full-time third car in order to secure it?
If you've got two competent drivers in a car, in Hyundai's case, that's working at the minute. It certainly is with Danny Sordo in the car. I don't imagine they'll go forward with two drivers sharing a third car. They'll pick the best one and put him in a third car if they've got the budget to run three cars going forward, and if Mickelson performs the way that he should do, and he's there to win rallies, surely.
Yeah. Jack?
It's budget. It's just really simple. From a car company's point of view, it's down to the commercial sense of doing it. And we spoke of this before, with everything going electric and alternative drive, I certainly see long-term pressure on rallying to keep manufacturers in there. So that's something that has to be contended as well.
Jack, what's your take on it?
On the third car? I think if you want to win the manufacturer's championship, you've got to have three full-time cars with three full-time drivers. And we've seen, you mentioned Toyota earlier. I think they've, it's tough, but I think what they've seen, the potential-wise, what they've seen in Ezza Pekkalappi, they've basically written that car off for last season and this season, and said to, well, maybe not said to Ezza Pekka, but I think their way of thinking is, this guy is very, very talented and has a lot of potential. Let's give him a car. We accept he's going to go off and he's going to have problems. He doesn't know all the rallies, so he's not going to be the most competitive person in the world. But we give him a year or 2 years doing all the rallies or the majority of the rallies, and hopefully by the end of that 2 years, he's a championship contender. So I think what they've done is attempted to create a top line driver by giving him that leeway, but also that's obviously hurting them in the manufacturers championship, arguably. So it's difficult. I think a lot of the teams are looking at their driver lineups. I don't think any of them will be 100% happy with what they've got. I think, you know, obviously M Sport are happy with Sebastian Ogier. Elvin's had a, you know, tough year. And Timo's been dropping in and out, so I think they'd like to have three cars with three top line drivers. I don't think they're quite there with Timo yet. Hyundai, very, very turbulent with Danny and Hayden. Toyota, we discussed a little bit there, and Citroen, arguably just not going for the Manufacturers Championship. So I think all four teams are looking at how they assort their driver lineup for next year. But the one thing that is for certain is, as the rules stand, if you want to win the Manufacturers Championship, you're going to have three strong cars with three strong drivers in them.
Trev, we do get people who send messages into us from time to time, and I'd just be interested to get your take on, obviously we've just mentioned Elvin, of course. You know, Elvin was somebody who very much, you know, I listened to, you know, some of the stuff on WRC and also on M Sports on podcast and stuff like that, and Malcolm obviously, you know, was concerned. He did have a great start to the rally, and I must admit my heart sank a little bit for Elvin and for Dan. You know, I think he damaged the cooling package and all that, had to be replaced on the car before the beginning of the event, and then he went out and did what we know Elvin can do, and showed very naturally that's where he should be.
I don't know what was different. I think he's probably struggling to explain what was different on this rally, but certainly, you know, straight away from the first proper stage, what was he, 2.3 seconds slower than Hayden? And from then on, apart from the spin, I think I saw him spin on the first day. Apart from that, he didn't really put a wheel wrong. And it's back to the potential that we know he had, and the potential that Malcolm Wilson was so excited at the start of the year. He said, watch out for what Elvin can do. I'm delighted he's got his mojo back, and it's great to see that pace. It'll be interesting going into the next one, into Sardinia, where the surface is a little bit sandy, although saying that, it was quite soft in Portugal, so that low speed traction and the traction issue that the Fords had, it'll be interesting going forward in Sardinia to see if they can keep that momentum going, keep that pace going.
You're listening to the Absolute Rally Podcast, bringing you the biggest guests, the latest news, and in-depth analysis of all the goings-on from across the world of rally. Help us make more episodes. Become a patron at patreon.com/absoluterally.
Boys, I wouldn't mind reading. I was purposely going to Elvin because obviously just been mentioned and thanks for that show. We had a message in a couple of weeks ago, and I'm not doing this on purpose, by the way. We had a message in from Jeremy Mayers. Thank you so much for taking the time, by the way, Jeremy, to send us a message. And I have not purposely left this message for now to kind of go near. You'll understand why when I read it out, folks. But love the podcast. However, I can't believe you have an unrealistic view of Elvin Evans' ability. Yes, he did win the RAC rally, of course, Wales Rally GB, but it was in his backyard in those conditions that really suited him. He was very good last year in Argentina, but other than that, the only time he's been anywhere near the pace was when he was on the D-Mac tyres, and they were better than the Michelins in those conditions. I recently saw the Red Bull TV interview with him, and he's obviously a good bloke, but that doesn't mean he can cut the mustard. I hit enter too early. Sorry, second message. In my comments on Elvin Evans, compare him to Craig Breen or Hayden Padden, who are much quicker drivers who have been, I'm going to use the word they used, shit on by their terms. I would back either of these drivers ahead of Evans in the same car. I'd love to see Ford sign Padden for a full-time gig next year. His only limitation is tarmac, but how does he improve if he's not given the experience? Being an Aussie, I love the way Hayden has become one of our fastest WRC drivers. Hayden's from New Zealand. I would rate him even as a number two driver in the present team. Mickelson has been given the drive ahead of Hayden. I know who would have gone better this season given the same amount of drives. Go Hayden. So I think he's a Hayden Padden fan.
Are you sure? I'm not sure that really came across.
Yeah, I think he's a Hayden Padden fan. I think he...
It's a Southern Hemisphere thing.
I think most definitely. I think there
was it Jeremy? Yes. Did you say Tony? Jeremy, thanks for messaging in. I think it's great when readers pose us a few questions. The one thing I'd say about Elvin this year is that he lost a lot of mileage with the crash in Mexico, and let's not forget that crash was A, at the start of the rally, and B, a place where pretty much every driver had a massive moment. And I'm not defending Evans's crash. Obviously, any crash is bad, and there wasn't any mechanical error, so technically it was Elvin's fault, but it wasn't an easy corner, and a lot of drivers had a problem there. What that did was rob Elvin of a lot of gravel mileage on a tyre he's not used for 2.5 years, and has changed a little bit in that time. And you know, don't forget Monte Carlo in Sweden, not representative of gravel rallies. So you know, basically the last time Elvin used any Michelin tyres was 2015. So he lost Mexico, and then it was difficult in France because of the co-driver change, and then obviously Argentina was his first gravel rally in full. Which you know, yeah, he wasn't on the pace quite, but got to the end of the rally, which is what he needed to get some gravel mileage, and then you know, delivered a strong performance in Portugal. So I think it's unfair to say that Craig Breen and Hayden Padden are better drivers than Elvin Evans, but I think looking at this year, there's a little bit more to read into how his performances have gone based on the fact that you know, he's switching tyres, and it, you know, he's lost a lot of gravel mileage, which you know, was his own fault, but I still think it's, you know, it's a bit difficult to kind of judge his performance. And I think the next couple of gravel rallies, particularly, you know, we're going to Sardinia, it would be very important to see where Elvin's where Elvin's pace is, because you know, he has got to get closer to Sebastian Ogier. He really has. If he wants to be a championship contender in the future, he really needs to close that gap to Sebastian, and that's got to start now.
Have you got anything to add to that, or has Jack just nailed it?
Yeah, he has. He's won a world title. What more do you want? And he proved in the R5 car just how quick he was, certainly in Sweden, where he beat everybody in their own backyard. And so every surface, he's got it. He will hold back a little bit if he's not happy with the car. So if you compare him to Tanak when they're competing against each other in the same car, Elvin would come out of it a little bit, and he wouldn't push if he wasn't happy with the car. And he's got that maturity that maybe a lot of other drivers don't have.
There you go. So, Gary, thanks for messaging it. And please, folks, by all means, if you want to put it straight or you want to add your comments to it, please just message in. You can do it via the Facebook page, or you can email us via the website as well. Right, boys, believe it or not, we haven't even mentioned who won, and we're 40 minutes in. So I know most people, and I always say that, don't I? Of course, we always work on the fact that you know what's going on, and we're just kind of breaking it down a little bit. Tierney Neuville, of course, who won the event, Jack. Is it too soon to say when we've now turned the corner? Because, you know, again, like I've just said about Elvin, Thierry equally seemed very comfortable, very confident. His stage ends were good again. You know, he was kind of, you know, the Thierry that we've seen before. Has he turned the corner?
It's difficult to say, isn't it? I think generally overall so far this year, he's performing better than he was last year. He's doing a lot better in the Drivers' Championship, for sure. And at the end of the day, that's what he wants. And some drivers do need to learn that it's not about winning every single rally. And I think Thierry Neuville has been one of them people. I think growing up, you know, he wants to win the rallies. He wants to be the best driver every day of the week. And, you know, that's very admirable. But it's not how you win a World Rally Championship, unfortunately. And I think Thierry it seems to me like that's clicking a little bit better now. And we've seen a couple of rallies, I think, where, in the last year, where he's backed off a little bit when previously he would have gone balls out and really, really made mistakes and done too much. But, you know, like I said, I think looking at it so far this year, I mean, looking at the championship, he's very well off. And do you want to start on the World Rally Championship?
Go on,
Tony. So Sebastian Ogier, in 2013, at this point, he was 52 points ahead. In 2014, he was 33 points ahead. In 2015, he was 66 points ahead. In 2016, he was 65 ahead. And in 2017, he was 40 ahead. And currently, at this point, he's now 19 behind. So whether you attribute that to OJ's performances or OJ's car, the fact of the matter is Thierry has picked up the points where he's needed to. And very, 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 very good performance from him.
Trev, apart from having our own Gary Boyd in the guys here, Jack Bengian,
Whoa, don't put me in that category. I'm not ready for that.
I could have rolled that stuff off, to be perfectly honest with you. But
it's written on a screen in front of me, and it's going to be an MN tomorrow.
Okay, fair dues. Trev, I know it's such an open-ended question, and it could go anywhere. I've just put the same one to Jack. But, you know, you analyse this stuff probably better than most, and what goes on with drivers and how we see them, the stage ends, of course, having been there and everything else. Do we feel like what Jack just said there? Do we feel that Thierry is putting those building blocks in moving forward and maybe turning a corner now?
Definitely. I forget about the calamity of the first two rallies last year in Monte Carlo in Sweden. But I'll say, if you looked at his record after that, he had quite a few wins. The only sort of blips were in Deutschland and in Catalonia. I think we took a wheel off it. This year, again, consistently knows how to get on the podium. He seems to have the speed, and he's making less mistakes and probably more consistent than Oit. But again, as I said before, last weekend, Oit seemed to turn a corner, I think, in Portugal last year. So those two guys, I think, if they keep going the way they're going, will form a good challenge for Ogier at the championship. And we don't know, as I say, what that Ford's going to be like when it heads to Sardinia. Interesting thing about Ogier, you can come back and talk to Thierry if you like, but what I found really interesting was his pace in Portugal, certainly in the first pass in the stages. I think it was in the third stage where he was only, what, 1 second off Mick, who was quickest. And the last one, was he quickest on that one? Maybe third quickest, something like that. But he was within 2 or 3 seconds of fastest on the first run over the stages, which, considering the amount of loose surface that was on, because they actually put more sand in the stages this year, which the drivers were complaining of a little bit, it just shows you the pace that he had. And he brought forward from that rally last year, because that's certainly where he turned the corner. And it'll be interesting, as I said, to see if that momentum continues into Sardinia with a surface that's notably different.
Just talking about Sebastian Ogier, of course, he did make a rare mistake, Jack, and it is a rare mistake because he's come out today and said that it was something in the pace notes. A very un-Sebastian Ogier rally at that point, you know, apart from what Trev's just been saying there, of course, consistency for it to see him go off like that. And I don't know whether it was, you know, whether how far he was on the tyres, because it looked like a lateral grip thing or whatever. I don't know, but it was a very un-Sebastian Ogier exit, really.
Yeah, it was pretty unspectacular as well, wasn't it? The crash itself. It looked like it was a bit of an error between the crew, and it's a difficult one. I think it's never acceptable for a driver to crash, is it? But I don't think any rally driver is going to go for a year without having some sort of accident or some sort of problem. So, yeah, not a great rally for him, and came at a bad time with the failed appeal for the points back in the earlier rally, and losing the championship lead to Nerville as well. So as well as crashing out, it was kind of a package of the worst case scenario for Sebastian, really. But it was anyone who will bounce back and continue to do what he does best by scoring the maximum amount of points on any rally possible, it'll be Sebastian.
That was going to take me to the next point there, Trev. This is interesting now, isn't it? Because this is, dare I say, almost... Is it new territory for Sebastian Ogier? Because, of course, we remember the infighting that happened, of course, in his very, very early days, where he wanted to be fighting and everything else, of course, is his old teammate, Sebastian Loeb. To find himself in this position now where he's not the rabbit, as it were, being chased, he's now actually the one chasing the rabbit. Will we find out anything more we don't already know about Sebastian Ogier, do you think?
No, I don't think so. He was in this position last year, wasn't he? Where Neville was scraping the road, he quite enjoyed running second or third, whatever it was at the time. I think it's great work by Absolute Rally again, so we put the curse on him. Straight away, I predicted him.
And
put the caveat on that he doesn't make mistakes. So I think there's a proper opportunity here. So there's four of us usually. Okay, if we pick four different drivers, we've got a good proposition here to go to someone and say, right, how much is that going to cost? How much are you going to pay us?
Yeah, those manufacturer teams, don't worry about third car. Just sponsor the podcast and we'll just predict all the other drivers.
Exactly. That's what it is. Not one of us picked Neville. And so who did you pick, Jack? You were on Tannock, I think. Ryan was on Tannock. You were on Hayden, and I was on.
I was just about to retrieve them then. You know what? We need to kind of just mention a couple of things just to wrap up, because we're headlong into any other business. In fact, we should have been there about 3 minutes ago, truth be told. But I just wanted to mention the juniors. Jack, I don't know whether you kept an eye on this one. Absolute carnage. But I have to say, and yeah, I fell for Callum Devine. He was going so, so well. Tom Williams, of course, friend of the show, was steady in the, right in the middle of the pack, but Callum was there fighting. And, I fell for him when I seen the result come in. Dennis Radstrom was just dominant in juniors. He really, really was. I don't know whether you've seen how many stage wins he had, but he was completely dominant in that. But, I just feel for our lads really a little bit.
Well, it's 14 minutes in the lead in the end, Russia, wasn't he? So any rally where you win by 14 minutes isn't a bad one. But yeah, he was definitely a cut above the rest. And yeah, I mean it was it was kind of taken away a little bit by the fact that so many people went out. But yeah, like you say, it's really difficult because it seemed like Callum and the likes of were having some really good battles, and Emil Bergqvist went out early as well, and he's very quick. So yeah, it was a bit of an, I never like to see rallies like that, because it's kind of unfulfilled promise, isn't it? So many good drivers who could have really fought for the win there, and instead we've got a winner by 14 minutes, which is great for Radstrom, but not so great for the kind of the distant spectator.
I think the other mention we've got to go to another friend of the show, somebody of course we only had on a couple of weeks ago, Trev, and again my heart sank. I got so excited. I got probably just as excited to see this young man leading WRC2, Gus Greensmith, at one point, and I was, I had everything crossed, and then he had an issue, and then he had to retire, and I can't even imagine. I know he put something on social media about he just wants to have a quiet few days at home and regroup and everything else. I can't even imagine putting into words what the highs of leading an event to then, having a problem and saying, okay, well, we're still in a podium, and then going out of the event. I can't even imagine what that must be like.
Yeah, we spoke about this before. The highs in rallying are brilliant, but the lows are completely through the floor, especially in Portugal. I remember speaking to him last year and we interviewed him, and he was just explaining how special Portugal is to him, the whole FAF thing, the enthusiasm, the spectators. So for him to go there and win that rally would have been seventh heaven. And That's how cruel it is. You talk about Callum Devine on the 18th stage. Just going back to the juniors as well, it's just amazing how M-Sport can keep those cars reliable. You watch the expressions of the WRC drivers in the finish of the stage, especially just even on the first pass. You think of the second pass of a stage, trying to get those R2 cars through the stage is mind-blowing, and still have a competitive battle. It's a fair play to M-Sport for getting
Jack or Trev, but it was David Holder, the New Zealander, and there was another driver, and his name has gone completely on my head, but basically they rolled on exactly the same corner in exactly the same place. I think it was Tom Williams
did roll, certainly. I mean, he might have been over a couple of times today,
I think so, yeah, rally.
Even at the end of the rally I saw David Holder doing donuts in the middle of the circuit.
I love it. That was our dissecting a Rally Portugal. Before we go to any other business, boys, anything you want to add on Rally Portugal?
No, I think we've done it to death, haven't we?
Have you got any other business, boys? Okay, yeah. Both at the same time. Okay, I'm gonna say Shrev, you do yours first.
Interesting. One of the reason Chris Meek went off, I watched the in-car, he's got a note which says hug, which is really internal, which stay close to the apex of the corner, one less elbow, but let's call it hug, that makes sense to me, keep it as simple as possible. So any strange notes or pace notes that you've heard over the year, I'll caveat this, the one famous one that everybody refers back to, I think it was Vatanen who started, was the maybe, and that depended on his mood as to how fast he went. It might have been originally Kanker, I'm not quite sure, so maybe as a note was in there. I'll go even further back to when I was doing navigation rallies way back in South Armagh in the 70s, and there's a guy called Ian Boyle, and he always struggled between his left and his right. So he got his co-driver to call fags or matches. In other words, where cigarettes were, which pocket they were in, and which pocket his matches were in. So instead of left and right, it was fags and matches. I've had lots of drivers. I've had a couple of drivers. I'll say lots. I've had about three drivers who have had to say your side or my side because they struggle with left or right at speed. But fags and matches, I thought, was a great one.
I would love to see the Chuckle Brothers do a rally now. That to me, the Chuckle Brothers, to me.
So any others that any of our listeners can think of that they've spotted over the years that are interesting, of course, the translations to the languages that we don't understand, it'd be interesting to see if there's anything stands out there. Anything you guys have heard?
I'm trying to think whether I've had anything.
I'm sure I can think of any of you.
I've put stuff in my notes, and it's only nothing amazing. I put quite a lot of I can use it because it's my train shed, as Jack put. I put quite a lot of shit in my notes over the years, and it's normally what's on the road. And I will say it's just this bit's just shit. Shit for the next mile is normally is normally quite a common one for me. Mm-hmm. Jack Bennion, you or any of the business?
I've got two fairly small ones. The first one's a positive one, and the second one's a bit of a negative one. But the first one is congratulations to David Bogie. Anyone who doesn't know him, he's quite UK-centric, is five-time Scottish champion and 2011 British champion. Won his 50th rally over the weekend. It's quite a good start to the year, so well done to David, and I hope we can have him on the show again soon. He's always a good person to have on, and always asking people like Frederick Arlen for his sister's phone number, so that's good to have him on the show. The negative one, a big get well soon to Jack Lees, who was doing the Plains rally and unfortunately broke his leg in a crash. Glad to hear that he's okay and his operation went okay, and his co-driver Michael Gilby is a constant source of brilliant information to MN. He's always dropping me Facebook messages to let me know about what road rallies are going on and some of the more clubman stuff in the UK. Michael was pinned in the car as Jack had undone his belt, so it was quite an uncomfortable few minutes for him. And then the weekend after, which was last Saturday, he had another crash on the Night Owl road rally as well. So not a good couple of weeks for Michael Gilby, and glad to see that they're both okay and hopefully rejuvenating and going to be back rallying soon.
Yeah, well said. I mentioned Jack last week in my end of the business as well. My end of the business is probably a little bit left field, this one. we've got Mike Shaw coming up, who does the Open Paddock podcast, but also does now the live stream bits and pieces for ARA on Rally America. Now, I'll be honest with you, I like me American Rally Association stuff, and I've got the app and stuff, and so it's very, very easy to put little videos on. Anyway, I love Discovery Channel. Okay, I've done some work with Discovery Channel in years gone by, and I do love a lot of the car programs, and I find them one of the programs that I can kind of put on the background and you know, and just kind of zone out a little bit. It's quite nice. And there used to be one which is still on now, which I think is due to come back around. It used to be called Fast and Loud. And Richard Rawlins, and they used to have a mechanic there called Aaron Kaufman, who left the program, went to do something else himself. And anyway, long story short, he's now got his own program. What happens, you know, over there when people leave these programs, they then get their own. And he did the Olympus rally at the weekend, and Discovery, they're filming the whole thing, and there's 3 1-hour episodes on rallying in America, and that Discovery are filming with Aaron Kaufman. And it started off with him going to get coaching, and then it went to him building the car, and then obviously him doing the events at the weekend. And Mike, there's some videos on there, on their website, if you want to check out that. But we didn't get to talk about it too much with Mike. We were a bit limited for time, so please seek out if you're a big fan of that type of stuff anyway. But you're going to get a whole new set of eyes, people who watch these programs being given access into rallying, almost, I suppose, at a clubman level, which I don't think ever does any harm. I'm always a little bit nervous, Jack, I'll be honest with you, when I see TV programs get made, and I always want it to be true to the sport, and that's my only other fear. And I hope Dick Tracy is true to the sport, but you know, it's good publicity for those guys.
Yeah, definitely. You always want to see any sort of motorsport kind of documentary or film done by people who are not usually involved in the sport. There's always a worry that they're going to oversimplify things for people who enjoy the sport, or also kind of just get the whole kind of angle wrong. So yeah, hopefully they go well. Can I add one more thing, Tony, before we go?
Of course you can.
I think we need to do a penalty debate special next week when Ryan Champion is back.
You've got to remember, Ryan Champion will be pissed as a fart next week.
No, he won't. He'll be in the Accra Hotel lobby with buses going past him, and he'll be only too happy to chat to us, I'm sure.
That's where he's been.
He had
for
a great tweet over the weekend, guys. If you've not seen it, I don't know how you can sum up a story as well as he did in sort of however many characters are in a tweet these days. But he wrote, "This is getting ridiculous now, and applied far too late. A better solution needs to be found urgently. This is WRC, not auto testing," referring to the 10-second penalty that was given to Ezepeka Lapi for budging a roundabout bail on SS9 in Portugal. So Lapi had gone flat out.
Didn't Danny Sordo had the same issue.
Yeah, I think his was applied before the end of the rally, wasn't it? But Ezepeka had gone flat out for the whole rally, and then found out that, you know, he'd been given a 10-second penalty, which is, you know, we'll save that for the debate next week. But I'm looking forward to that one if Ryan's around.
Yeah, we'll see whether he's around or not. Let's see whether he's around or not. Right, Trev, you can go and I was just about to say go and relieve yourself, but that sounds wrong. you can stand down now. Just to pull away the smoke and mirrors, as we were getting ready to record this podcast, Trevor Agnew was getting undressed while we were sat waiting for him, which is why there was a little bit of a delay at the beginning of the podcast while he was still hanging up his trousers. There you go. There's an image that you never thought you'd get in a rally podcast. And on that note, Trevor Agnew, thank you for joining us this week on Absolute Rally.
It's been an absolute pleasure as always.
I like the way you get absolute in. You will be back very, very soon. Jack, same time, same place for you next week.
I certainly hope so.
Good man, good man. Folks, we're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back with Mike Shaw, who's talking to us about ARA and the Olympus Rally.
The Absolute Rally Podcast, made by us, supported by you. Help us make more episodes. Become a patron at patreon.com/absoluterally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. As promised last week, we said we were going to talk about ARA, the American Rally Association, something we were very close to towards the end of last season. The season's only just got started over there. They have a mega break over there, and we always reach out to somebody. Normally, we reach out to a driver. In the past, we've had some of the guys from Team O'Neill and things like that. But the man on the mic for this particular season, or certainly was on the Olympus Rally, was a friend of the show. Mike Shaw, welcome to Absolute Rally once again, Mike.
Tony, it is good to be back on the show.
Right. as I've just said, there's been a lot that's gone on over there in the close season. So maybe in layman terms, please, Mike, in layman terms, if we can get a flavour of what's changed, what's gone on and everything else, because obviously ARA was very much in its infancy last season.
Yeah, it was its first year. They did notice kind of some issues on the management side of things. You know, everything kind of being done by committee took a little longer to get the decision-making process done. So they've kind of restructured over the offseason. There was a little bit of silence that got people nervous as they tried to figure things out. But now they are actually a wholly owned subsidiary subsidiary of USAC, which is a very large motorsports organization over here. And they're still a nonprofit, which was their original goal. They've got a committee there that can, an advisory board essentially, to advise the president that they have in place and whatnot. But they now basically have kind of an absolute power president that can make decisions on the fly, which the organization really needed. So it does help with some of those flaws. But in with that, the connections with USAC has been great. We expect a lot more promotion. We've already seen a bunch of sponsors come on board this year. We've got 7 rounds all in the USA. So things are actually rolling along really well. They've simplified the classes. We noticed there weren't that many entries of production cars really out there. So I kind of dropped production and went to where we basically got limited four-wheel drive, limited two-wheel drive, which is kind of like a Group N Plus-ish, you could call it. And then you've got the open class cars. And then they kind of took some of the regional guys and allowed them to be national in those normally aspirated four-wheel drive cars, like the, you know, the GC Subarus. So made that a national class, which is kind of a fun thing to see.
Now, one thing that did happen last year, of course, I think the open class guys were limited on number of tires and things like that. Is that also they try and ways of trying to level the playing field still this season?
Actually, no. They took away that that limitation. It was interesting. I was talking with John Buffum over the weekend at Olympus, and he said actually kind of internally they kind of want Super Rally Team USA not to be overly dominant just by tires, and so they kind of decided to limit themselves at events to kind of keep the competition alive, especially with the likes of Barry McKenna, who's probably one of their closest rivals, you know, out there. He's currently leading the Irish Forest Championship, Irish Forest Rally Championship over there with an R5. And so, you know, him racing over here, he's been steadily improving his pace, needs to work on consistency a bit. And, you know, he doesn't quite have the resources of a factory team. So they're going to try and limit themselves. Although at Olympus, he said, well, we're burning through tires so fast here because the loose surface was just, it was tearing things up. They said, well, we didn't use that limit here at this self-imposed limit at this event. But they are going to try and do that. But yeah, as an organization, nope, there are no limits now on tires.
There you go. I know the car that Barry's using over there is basically it's an old Fiesta Super 2000 with a Focus World engine in it. It did run in the national championships over here to some success. So it's good to see it working for him on the other side of the pond. And I know some of the guys that run that car as well. So yeah, it's good to see him getting on. Obviously, it's good to see Subaru over there having, you know, this strong kind of competition, albeit a privateer. Obviously, you know, Vermont Sports Car, Subaru USA have been dominant over the years. And we've got some different drivers, of course, this year as well. Obviously, Travis came back at his year last year. David's come back as the consistent one. He's there once again. But we had Patrick Sandell on this round. Previous round, of course, we had Chris Atkinson. Is that being split fairly between those two drivers?
Well, it is kind of right now. So, yeah, as you said, David Higgins is going to do the entire championship, and that kind of makes it a little hard for anybody to compete with him versus Barry McKenna, maybe. Travis is going to be here for some events, a limited schedule. We don't know exactly what events he's going to be doing, but as before, his Nitro Circus stuff has some schedule conflicts. So in the meantime, we've got Atco and Patrick Sandell that are both, you know, Super Rally Team USA drivers, but in their Rallycross. And so with the whole kind of mix up of what happened with GRC and the new America's Rallycross that's getting started up, you know, they've got time to get behind the wheel, and with their rally background, might as well throw them in a car, right?
Absolutely. I wonder if we'll see more than two Subarus on an event.
I would love to see that. That would be great. I did hear that there's a third Subaru that might be competing in the America's Rallycross series that starts this next weekend there at Silverstone. But I don't know about on the stage rally side. I would certainly love to see it. As it sits right now, you're right. First round went to Atco being here. Second round, we had Patrick Sandell at Olympus last weekend. And then just announced is that we will have Atco back in the car for Susquehanna Trail Performance Rally, so STPR in Pennsylvania. So he gets another time behind the seat, which is great because his engine blew on the first proper day, the second day of Oregon Trail. And on the Sunday, he would have won 6 of the 8 stages if it wasn't for the fact that we have an 80-mile-per-hour average limit that once you blow through that, the times are kind of nullified beyond that.
Yeah, we have that over here as well. That was a bone of contention on an event over here a couple of years ago as well. So yeah, we're very aware of the general average speeds and everything else. But moving forward, where do we see? Obviously, I know there was quite a strong passion to get younger drivers and engage younger people in the championship. What kind of steps are being taken with that? Obviously, the apps out there as well, which has been quite useful for people, you know, obviously trying to tap into that marketplace as well. What's happening with kind of younger fans, maybe even younger drivers?
Well, you know, as you know, last year they'd really tried to push to get a junior championship going. Unfortunately, a lot of that had the backing of DMAC, and then kind of, you know, right at the end of the year, DMAC said, "Nope, we're not going to be doing the type of support that we were originally planning." So, putting all their funds, I guess, into more R&D for the tire. So that kind of unfortunately harpooned the championship they were planning, but a lot of those ideas of how they were going to develop the cars, still make them fun to drive, but affordable, kind of went into the restructuring of those new classes. So they really want to try and push more people into that limited two-wheel drive class, and try and get more young drivers in there. But I think really the biggest benefit right now is the fact that there's just so many different contingencies offered. You know, they've got 3 different tire manufacturers, which tires are a cost, right? I mean, you can burn through those pretty quick if you're really pushing it. So between Hoosier Tires, Maxxis Tires, and Cooper Tires, you know, if you're signed up with one of those guys and you finish, you know, high in your class, you're going to take home some free rubber. And that definitely helps towards things. Ford Performance is on board, which, you know, Fiestas are a common car to use. So there's a contingency program with them. Of course, we've always had the support of Subaru. So I think it's really them kind of structuring more with working with all the sponsors they've got on board now to make sure that there's, I guess, more money for those drivers to be able to continue on.
Now, one thing that we all got giddy about, and I actually said on the podcast, it was possibly a stroke of genius when it came to marketing, was the fact that, of course, the man who is the king of marketing over there is Ken Block. But Ken didn't come back. It would have been very easy for him to come back with a Fiesta World car. It would have been very easy for him to come back with an R5 Plus, not too dissimilar, I suppose, to Barry McKenna's car in many ways. But coming back with a very iconic car from yesteryear, of course, the Esco Cosworth, which, you know, so many people have got fond memories of. Unfortunately, it's still one of those cars that never won a world championship, which is fine, staggering when you think about it. But anyway, that shape, you know, the whale tail and everything else, Ken coming back with that, I think possibly got more coverage, perhaps maybe just from rally media. I don't know whether outside media picked up on it, but certainly the interest in that car, you know, across the world, was, I think, was far greater than what would have been if he'd just come back in one of his old Fiestas.
I completely agree. You know, you cannot deny the marketing power of Ken Block, and not to mention his passion for the sport. Having him come back, and he's going to be doing 3 different events in our series, I'm so happy to see it. And that iconic car, it's no slouch, that's for sure. Okay, yeah, it's not going to have maybe suspension travel of the new Subarus and things like that. But it's not slow. I have to admit, I did get a ride in it on the press stage, and I think it's fair to say we won the press stage. But yeah, you know, it is an iconic car. It's almost a rolling museum piece, although it's not quite historic, I guess, maybe just a little beyond that. But it's very unique. It catches a lot of attention. And, you know, I think that's just good for the sport as a whole. He knew he wasn't going to be, you know, compete for the win. in these events. He's doing it just for fun. If you notice, the sponsorship on the car didn't really say, you know, Ford all over it. It was actually Hoonigan, which is, you know, his company, Hoonigan Racing, that is kind of running it. So, granted, he is backed by Ford. He's a Ford driver. But, yeah, he's doing this mostly just because he loves stage rally more than any other form of motorsport, and I couldn't be more happy to have him back. He did end up on the podium, which is great, him and Alex Gelsomino. So, a great, great iconic car, great from the media standpoint. Of course, ARA has also been doing our own media stuff. You mentioned just briefly the app. If you search for it on iTunes or in Google Play, you can kind of follow what's going on with the sport, which is a really awesome tool, something that I think more championships should try and do is have some sort of quick, easy way for people to access content. And we get a lot of that stuff fed in by the hashtag, as you know, right? So that gets a lot of the younger people involved. They can really follow what's going on. And so they make sure all that stuff goes into the social feeds and kind of follow what's going on with the rallies. And of course, there's the live streams that we've been doing. That's something that it was funny enough, since I've got my podcast I do with the Open Paddock, has now kind of rolled into me being this voice of ARA, as they've been calling me. And, me and Matt Kalish, who's the marketing director from ARA, we are doing live streams from every one of these rally events in the American Rally Association Championship Series. And that's been really cool. You know, getting behind the scenes right after the drivers come into service, or we'll get out on a live stage and, you know, tell you what's going on right then and there. We call it virtual spectating. It's great.
I like it. Virtual spectating. I like that. That's a good term. Be careful. Somebody will take that and run with it. Someone will take that and run with it. But there you go. Listen, Mike, it's as ever. It's always informative to have you on. And as I say, you guys are always very, very kind. And, you know, we support you guys as well, doing Open Paddock as well. And obviously you support us as well, which is always great. That's the way podcasting should work anyway. So, so we appreciate that. And we appreciate you coming on and talking to us about, the Olympus and obviously what's going on with the championship and obviously more. Obviously we'll get probably some of the drivers on the next few months as well, but we'll reach out to you as well in the not too distant future and get you back. If that's good with you, Mike?
That's good with me. If you want a quick word about what happened at Olympus, though, it was pretty dramatic, because we have a privateer who built his own car is leading the American Rally Association Championship Series now, because Higgins DNF'd, as did Barry McKenna. So interesting stuff.
So this is what's interesting, obviously, that's where I was going to go next, is who the winner was. But with regards to obviously, because David won the opening round, obviously Patrick Sandell, of course, was in the Subaru USA car, won the other round. But obviously with the way points have worked and stuff, like, just tell us a little bit about this character that's now leading the championship.
Yes, Jeff Seahorn, Seahorn Rally Team. He's a young man, used to be a motorcycle racer, and has moved into stage rally. This is his fourth year now, I think. And, you know, only been doing the national championship 2 years. And just a great young man with a huge amount of talent. Karen Jankowski, who's won a championship before, in more of a production class car, has been sitting alongside him. She's got a ton of experience. So Jeff and Karen, those two have just melded so well in that car. And like I said, it's a 2015 Subaru WRX STI that he built himself in his garage. He's a manager of like a Napa Auto Parts up there. And, you know, the kid's just wicked quick and smart. And that's what you need consistency and you need speed, right? So, that they are leading the ship. They were second overall, again, managing everything. So not too much broke on the car. What they broke, they were able to fix. And second overall at Oregon Trail and second overall at Olympus puts them in the championship lead.
That's got to be something that you guys obviously are going to be pouncing on now to make it look, you know, that's the key, isn't it? To make it look accessible to the guys watching, going, well, this guy's done this. You don't need the big team. You can still come and compete and do this.
And it's not even an open class car. This is that limited four-wheel drive class. So there's no carbon fiber bits, no, you know, massive anti-lag systems and things like that in there. It's still got a manual gearbox, and he's leading the championship. It's just an awesome thing to see. That team has just worked so hard. You go into and you look at their service crew, and it's Karen's husband, a bunch of the family friends and things like that. You know, it's probably about 3 or 4 people maybe working on the car, including Jeff himself. It's great.
Love it. Love it. Love tales like that. Love tales like that. That's how we did the British Championship a few years ago. Again, when I went back to British Championship, there was 3 of us. That's what I like. That's what I like, taking it to the big boys. So there you go. So now, listen, Mike, thanks for bringing us up to speed on that. And as I say, thanks for telling our listeners what's going on with IRA. And yeah, obviously, we're going to keep covering it. We did cover it quite a bit last year, and we'll get some of the guys on again. But yeah, keep up the good work. As I say, I was watching some of the bits and pieces. I've got the app on my phone, so I downloaded it last year. So that's how I kind of stayed up to date with stuff as well. So so yeah. Folks, seek it out because it is really, really easy to use as well, which is always a bonus, especially for someone like me. So, Mike Shaw, thank you for joining us once again on Absolute Rally.
You're very welcome, sir. And, just keep following us. Download the app. Go to the website. Follow us on Facebook, American Rally Association. There's a lot of content. We've got some great professional photographers. Oh, you should see some of the drone footage and stuff we've got now because of USAC's media people that are out there. Oh, it's a feast for the eyes, man.
There you go. Couldn't have put it best myself. Folks, thank you so much for the download. You know where we live. It's Absolute_Rally on Twitter, of course, and it's facebook.com/Absolute Rally. And you can catch up on all old episodes on absoluterally.co.uk. We'll be back same time, same place, in your little podcast hole next week.